and left. And then along came Sarah Palin and left us all a little confused. No, it's all right. It's 8:07. I'm Erin Hart. We're standing by for an interview with Austin Goolsbee, one of Barack Obama's senior advisors. If we don't get to your calls right away, just fear not. We'll get to them in a few minutes because he's on a very time schedule. He's got to speak in Aurora and then speak in Boulder. So we have to grab him when we can get him. Austin Goolsbee, by the way, I will introduce him to you as a Robert P. Gwynn Professor of Economics at the University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. And he'll outline some of Obama's plans for us for jumpstarting our economy, which we really need to hear right now. Thank you, Austin Goolsbee, for joining us. We appreciate it on your busy day in Aurora and Broomfield and everywhere else.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Now, Austin Goolsbee, what are we going – am I pronouncing your name correctly first?
Yes. Yeah, okay. You are.
I hope I am. Okay, good. All right. Now, this morning we've been having quite a passionate discussion. Small business people have been calling in. One fellow worried, you know, I'm making $250,000 gross. Won't I pay more taxes under Obama? That's gross, though, I think. And there's a lot of misinformation, too, I think, about how much your health care policies will cost, whether you're really going to cut taxes for 95% of Americans. On a day when we're tremulous and just became... What does it mean when they say the government buys AIG or gives them a bridge loan? You know, I want to start there, but then I also want you to know that we have all of these. I'm trying to pack everything in so that I can sort of unpack the questions for you in the beginning and let you pretty much let you talk because we have such a limited amount of time with you. So
okay.
I guess I'd like to hear, what does Barack Obama's plan mean for average people and maybe people making a little more money who seem to be a little frightened? And also, what does it mean when AIG, when the Fed has to step in and rescue AIG?
Okay, let's start with the economic plan and how it affects ordinary Americans and how
that
it affects people at the top. For 95% of workers, as you pointed out at the top of your statement, it's substantial tax relief. Obama's view is that the last 8 years where the approach has been explicitly, let's gear the tax relief to the very, very highest income people in the country and hope it trickles down, the data shows that didn't work. That's a job killer, not a job creator. And so his view is, let's have tax relief and let's gear it to the people who have been struggling. And those are the people making less than $150,000 a year. He gives substantial tax relief. Now, anybody making less than $250,000 a year will not have any tax rates go up at all. And that's net, as you say. That's not gross. Just having $250,000 of gross income as a small business will not generate a tax increase. More than 90% of small businesses get a substantial tax cut under Obama's plan. For anybody making more than $250,000, all that happens is that the rates go back to at most what they were in the 1990s when we had amazing prosperity. And so rates would go up only of quite a modest amount. So it's really trying to gear tax relief to ordinary Americans and invest in, for the longer run, invest in the things we need to make our economy competitive.
On ABC with George Stephanopoulos, George Will, rather dripping, has said, well, 95% of the Americans, 40% of Americans don't pay taxes. Won't they benefit too, though, the people who aren't even, don't make enough income to pay taxes?
Well, that was extremely misleading.
I'm so glad you can clear this up for me.
A typical worker in Colorado who's making a reasonable but modest income, I think if they looked at their paycheck and saw the size of the payroll tax that was on their check, I think they'd be surprised to hear George Will saying they don't pay any taxes.
That's like, what are these, Social Security and FICA? What's all this stuff on my check?
Exactly right. Exactly right. And so the centerpiece of Obama's tax relief is to give people a break on that, on their payroll taxes. So it's totally misleading to say these people don't pay taxes, because they do. It's just that they're not paying the income tax. They're paying it all in payroll tax. And so that's where Obama focuses the relief.
So they will get relief, too, under his plan.
Oh, exactly. That's primarily how they get relief. And so the claim that the George Will types of the world are putting forward is that because these people don't pay income tax, it's in some sense a welfare payment to give them credit to rebate the payroll taxes they pay. But once you think of it that way, of course, it's crazy.
Right, of course, absolutely. Now, you know, in terms of small business people, let's say who are making more than, I was saying this morning, and I hope I'm accurate, and I would imagine you will agree with me, Austin Goolsbee, that the prosperity of the Clinton years meant that even if you were, you know, paying more in taxes slightly, you're still taking home more money because the economy will be on sounder footing and our, you know, we'll be investing in our infrastructure, among other things, which we need desperately. So likely we'll do better economically, so that would float all boats, including people making more than $250,000, correct?
Oh, of course. Of course, you're exactly right. That was the lesson that we learned of the 90s, and that's precisely the reverse lesson that we unlearned in the 2000s under Bush, and that is Bush cuts taxes for the very highest income people, and he says, oh, this is going to be a great boon to the economy, and all the benefit is going to trickle down to ordinary people. And it didn't happen. The last time that happened, you go back, it's during the 90s. When the rates were modestly higher for people making $250,000 or more, but the economy does extremely well. And that's because we were making the investments that we needed to make. We were trying to move to alternative energy programs, for example. Obama's plan puts a focus on educating our workers, increasing the skills of our kids and of our own people to retool, to try to move out of the current manufacturing's where they're being threatened. He makes the investments in infrastructure, bridges and roads that you described,
right.
And he gives substantial tax relief. So the whole focus of his plan is on ordinary Americans, and he points out that's good for the economy. It's not just good because it's fair. That's what the economy needs. And this financial crisis is really the culmination of kind of an 8 years of the Bush-McCain philosophy.
Well, and I think some of it goes back to the deregulation under Ronald Reagan, too, doesn't it? I mean,
some goes to Ronald Reagan, but under Bush, you see a dramatic acceleration of the, it's not just deregulation, it's a mentality that says the government shouldn't even be involved in setting the rules of the road, that we should turn over to industry the idea of self-policing. And what we have seen is that when you turn over to groups the idea that you're going to police yourselves and make sure that nothing goes wrong, there's always a small group of bad actors who can wreak a terrible havoc on financial markets, on the economy. And that's the whole point of oversight. You have to have it.
You have to have it because people will go for greed. They'll go for as much as they can take if they're allowed to. I mean, and I'm not trying to criticize human beings, but we are human beings after all, and therefore pray perhaps to the lesser angels of our nature. Now, in terms of John McCain has lately been sounding very, very populist, Austin Goolsbee. He's even said he would control executive salaries, excessive executive salaries. And he is, again, trying to borrow. He even said enough yesterday. I was like, is he going to steal every one of Barack Obama's lines?
But I know, it was pretty amazing, wasn't it?
It is.
He spent the last 26 years in Washington, not just taking part in the massive dismantling of all oversight from the government in every area of the economy he had any influence on, but proudly so. He bragged last March that he was always for all types of deregulation in every form. And suddenly, when we start seeing the dark side of going too far in removing the role of the government and oversight, he's now in the last 2 days had a deathbed conversion and suddenly finds himself completely advocating the very views that he and his lobbyist advisors have spent trying to dismantle for the last 2.5 decades in Washington.
Well, and I'm thinking Phil Graham, Mr., you know, I don't feel your pain. I think you're in a depression. To heck with you. Isn't he online, even though he's no longer an official aide to the McCain campaign? Isn't he in line for the Secretary of Treasury job?
I don't know the answer to that. They don't share as much of their plans with me as you might think. But
I'm sure Austin Goolsbee, they do not.
It was reported that that McCain was discussing economic matters with Phil Graham just a week ago. So,
Mr. Deregulator himself.
Yeah, he's the guy, if anybody was most responsible for creating the financial regime that we're in right now, it's Phil Graham. And he was the creator of McCain's economic program. So I do think it's people have every right to say, is this just an 11th hour ploy that you're pulling because people acknowledge now that there has to be a role for the government to play oversight, or is this a firmly held belief? And if you look at who McCain has surrounded himself with, and if you look at his past record in Washington, I think the answer to that question is pretty obvious.
Austin Goolsbee, give us some insight as a professor of economics at the great University of Chicago Graduate School of Business. What is it? You're speaking in Aurora today to economic groups and also to in Broomfield. And what are you going to say to, because we live in the state where Silverado hit pretty big. There was a big savings and loan scandal. We're all a little worried about what's going on currently and how much paper we now own in terms of big corporations. And it is, the government has, practically speaking, taken over AIG, right?
Yeah, isn't pretty that, much. They're taking
in terms of
an 80% stake. Yeah, that's right.
That to me means we have a majority stake in the company. I'm no economic genius, but that's what it says to me. Okay, so what does this mean for us, the U.S. taxpayer?
Well, what it means for the U.S. taxpayer and what it means for the everyday person that has savings or is working at a company where they need to get credit, to expand, is we are in a very tumultuous period. And in a lot of ways, things in the financial market are sort of touching. Oh, it could be very problematic if things go wrong.
Right.
So in the short run, there's no question we have to address these. We have to address this crisis. Now, I think it is extremely appropriate to look at the record and note that more than a year ago, Barack Obama went to Wall Street and spoke at NASDAQ and was talking about the compelling need for stronger oversight in financial markets.
Right, transparency.
6 months ago, he gave a very specific speech, again on Wall Street, in which he laid out a 6-point plan to reestablish public trust. Partly on the strength of that speech and partly on the one before, he got the explicit endorsement of Paul Volcker himself and then of Bill Donaldson, David Reuter, and Arthur Levitt, three former heads of the SEC, including Bill Donaldson, a guy who is a Republican and has never endorsed a Democrat in his life.
Goodness.
So a whole number of authorities and regulators who have experience in these markets have been recognizing all along Obama's a guy who's very thoughtful, very well-informed, and has outlined a totally coherent program that would help establish the public trust that's needed for our capital markets to function. Now, that said, once we're in this turmoil that we're in right now, we absolutely need to have somebody with wise judgment and a cool head. And the contrast with McCain from Obama's good judgment couldn't be greater. On each of these issues, McCain just flops from one position to the next, depending what happens, and it's because he's fundamentally out of touch. You saw probably his statement that the fundamentals of the economy are sound.
Yes, we the fundamentals resented that. But anyway, go ahead.
The thing that was, as I started asking, what would have to happen for him not to say that? I mean, what would lead him to say, well, the fundamentals are a little bit iffy right now? I mean, we've lost 600,000
jobs
for 8 consecutive months. The stock market fell 500 points in a day.
Yeah, I know.
The biggest bankruptcy of all times. It was like, which fundamentals is he talking about?
Yeah, and then he tried to claim that I was really talking about the American worker. So
yeah,
I started saying, well, the fundamentals are hurting out here, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Austin Goolsbee, I promise to let you go so you can make it to your speech on time. I appreciate your time and your insight this morning. I could talk to you for hours, and I appreciate your time.
Yeah, this has been really quite fun. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you so much. Senior Economic Advisor to the Barack Obama campaign, AustinGoolsbee.com. And for details about Barack Obama's plans, check out BarackObama.com. I'm Aaron Hart, filling in for Jay Marvin on AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk. We'll be right back after Progressive Traffic with John Turk, which is coming up next.
His call for fiscal responsibility would be believable if he wasn't for more tax cuts for the wealthiest Americans and more of a trillion-dollar war in Iraq paid for with deficit spending and borrowing from foreign creditors like China.
Hi, this is Aaron Hart on AM 760 Colorado's Progressive Talk. Thank you for joining me. And by the way, the Federal Reserve is listed at .gov, so I'm happy to say it's a government agency. It's 303-713-7600. I'm welcoming you, and thank you. Wasn't Austin Goolsbee great? Don't you feel much better about the economy? I do. I think it's going to be a much better time. I really do. I'm not kidding you. I really believe that. 303-713-7600. I would love to talk to you. We've got a couple of lines free for the first time in a spell, so join us. Steve in Denver, good morning, and thank you for waiting. Did you like Austin Goolsbee?
I did. He was great.
He was great.
I just wanted to talk about health care. I mean, I know we've been talking about the economy all morning, and Austin was great, but...
I was going to try to squeeze in a healthcare question, too, but I knew he had to book for his speech.
So. Yeah, I was hoping you were going to get to it because I've been wanting to talk about it because I look at healthcare from a different perspective. I have a disabled child. He's chronically ill, and I think that everybody's been talking about healthcare from the perspective, and everybody's been seeing it as, well, if I get sick and got to go to the emergency room or if Johnny has to go get stitches. Like, I think everybody can find a way to afford that. But it's when you get really sick.
Yeah.
You have somebody in your family who is really sick where this gets really difficult.
Oh, and house, bankruptcy, you can lose a number of things.
Exactly. I mean, bankruptcy, I mean, it's the number one cause for families going into bankruptcy right now, or medical bills.
I know.
And health care, getting health insurance, it doesn't mean you don't have medical bills. And I think people don't understand that. Because when you, and let me back up, I'm blessed to have awesome health insurance coverage from my company that I work for.
Oh, I'm glad.
But at the same time, health insurance doesn't pay for everything. They pay, I mean, you have your deductible, you have your yearly deductible, and then health insurance pays a percentage of covered eligible cost. And that's based on what your plan says is a covered eligible cost. And it may be 80%, maybe 70%, maybe 90%, but you're still on the hook for the rest of it.
Right.
And, you know, I was doing some research, you know, into, you know, McCain's plan, because the things that he says, you know, on the surface, well, that sounds pretty good. He's going to make health insurance affordable for all Americans. I'm like, okay, well, what does that mean? So I looked on his website, and what that means to him is that he's going to provide a $2,500 tax credit to individuals and a $5,000 tax credit to families, payable directly to your insurance provider that you go find on your own. And
wow.
Like, okay, well, what does that mean? So you dig deeper into it. How much would health insurance cost for my family if I had to pay for it out of pocket that I, you know, without my company? It's $12,000 there. So who's going to pay the other seven? Because I wouldn't be able to afford it.
That's I know. I hear you. No, I'm paying so much a month, I'm starting to think, okay, how much can I scale back and get away with it, you know? And I only have a couple of minor prescriptions, but are preventative kinds of things that you want to keep taking.
Right.
And it's like, you know, I could stop taking them and run the risk of, you know, dying 10 years earlier, or I could, you know, it's just, it's ridiculous. It's like, why should I even have to think for one nanosecond about that? Why should you have to think about the, you know, these are the kinds of worries that keep you so preoccupied, you can't be as effective working. And that's wrong. You know, I'm all about productivity. I'm all about us getting, you know, more bangs for our bucks in the workplace. But on the other hand, you know, people can't work if they're crippled by worry in a way as effective as they could if they were worry-free. And that's part of the problem. I mean, you have health insurance covered by your company, but obviously it isn't stretching far enough.
No, I mean, let me give you some perspective. I mean, people don't even understand that some things cost this much. My son was on a drug treatment program that cost $25,000 a month.
Oh my God!
$25,000 a month, and if anybody wants to see the bill, I can show it to you. And I mean, you just until you're in the situation, you have no idea that that's how much some of the things cost. And luckily, it was considered a prescription. So, I mean, so there was some haggling with the insurance company to get them to cover it, and then I just had to pay my copay. But imagine if I didn't have insurance, then he wouldn't get it. because I wouldn't have been able to afford it. And there were other children at Children's Hospital here in Denver who have the same who have the same issues as my son. And we talked to some of the parents, and they couldn't get it because they couldn't pay for it. You know, and I mean, and it just, and he was, I mean, and it just compounds. He was on this treatment for 2 months. Well, actually, he was on it for 3 months previously. They took him off of it. He went back on it for another 2 months. So do the math. And the second time he was on this treatment, he had a bad reaction to it. Put him in the hospital for a week. You know, just more cost.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank you so much for sharing your personal story. We all really, really appreciate it.
Yep.
And I appreciate you. Thank you so much for letting us know that and telling us your story this morning. And I hope all continues to go as well as can be expected. And I really do believe, I wouldn't be saying this if I didn't really believe it. I do believe that Barack Obama is the best on health care and everything else. I really
do.
And we're going to try to get a guest on health care. I'm actually trying to look up. I was trying to, the reason I sound a little distracted, I was trying to look up stuff on his website for you to see if I could find you any observations about that. But unfortunately, the type on my computer is so small on this particular screen that I'm on that I can't read it. So, I mean, it's really, really tiny. And I'm not in my normal, I'm in a smaller studio that doesn't have a lot of the different capabilities that most of them do. So I can't read it, but I'll promise you this. I'll look at it tonight and we'll talk about it again and tomorrow. And John Turk is on the trail of trying to find a guest to talk about Barack Obama's plan for health care.
Can I get in one bottom line about John McCain's plan? If for families who are in this situation, families who may possibly be in this situation, who can't afford health insurance right now, his plan will do nothing to help you afford it. Because you're still going to, if you have a family of four, you're still $7,000 out of pocket just to buy the insurance.
His plan
says that if you find innovative health care that costs less than the credit, hey, we'll take the difference and put it in a medical spending account for you. But I guarantee you won't find anything that's less than the credit. It's going to be $7,000+ more than the credit.
And I just want to let everybody know, too, there is a blog at BarackObama.com where you can discuss your ideas on the healthcare industry. So if you want to go to BarackObama.com and you, too, can contribute and ask questions and, you know, get some observations from people. He's talking about modernizing the healthcare system and providing quality, affordable, portable coverage for all. So I don't think it's going to be the decimation of the insurance companies either. I think they'll actually welcome the relief. 303-713-7600. Keith and Denver, hang in. I want to give you more time to talk. So I'm going to go to traffic with AM 760 Colorado's Progressives Talks. Well, that was a big mouthful. John Turk coming up next. It's 8:33 in the morning on the J. Marvin Show. I'm Aaron Hart filling in. Go, John.
Talked about siding with the people, just before he flew off to Hollywood for a fundraiser with Barbara Streisand and his celebrity friends.
Yeah, and his celebrity friends, Leonardo DiCaprio and Chris Rock. I mean, what could be cooler than that? Give me a break. John McCain's just jealous because the only celebrity he's got in his quiver is Sarah Palin. You know, I think I'd rather have Tina Fey. We're going to play that for you today, too, if we can possibly get away with it. Don't forget, we've got Congresswoman DeGette coming up. And I remember her before she was a congressman. She used to come on my show, Woman, when she was running. It's great. I'm really excited to catch up with her because apparently there's a big woman announcement. My bet is it's the National Organization of Women is going to endorse Barack Obama. Now, somebody wrote me and asked me in an email, what is the order of succession? What happens if John McCain gets president, dies in office? Yes, she accedes to the presidency. And then the order of succession, which was ratified by the 25th Amendment in 1967, leads to the Speaker of the House, Nancy Pelosi, would be the vice president. That is the second person in the line of succession. So if that'd be weird, wouldn't it, to see Sarah Palin and Nancy Pelosi as part of the same team? Wow. The president pro tempore of the Senate, Robert Byrd, is the second one to come after that. And then it goes to the Secretary of State and on down the line. So just so you know, I still haven't gotten an answer to my question. I'll throw it out there in case anybody knows. What happens if, God forbid, John McCain dies before the election? Does he appoint? Do they go for another? Do they have another convention? How does that work exactly? Keith in Denver, welcome to AM 760 Progressive Talk. Welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for taking my call. Well, actually, I'm a conservative Republican.
That's okay. I'm sorry. No, I'm just kidding.
We're not all perfect, so thank you. If you can't laugh at yourself, you can't laugh at anything, really.
Exactly. Amen, brother. We agree on that. Let's start there.
But anyways, well, I listened to your program yesterday and heard another guy. I think his name was Scott.
Yes.
Wow. Well, he made a few good points, but, I mean, not all conservatives are as extreme as he may have been.
Well, he was, we were both fired up. And sometimes when both of you are fired up, you can collide. You know what I mean? I look back on it and I realize I maybe was scolding him, but I was angry at him because he kept trying to interrupt me. And I was going to give him time to talk, as I will give you time to talk about this morning. What point would you like to make, Keith?
Well, I was we're on the topic of the economy and things like that. But your last caller was talking about healthcare, and I'd like to touch on that. I mean, we have the best healthcare system in the world. I mean, as far as the quality of care.
Actually, we don't. We don't. There have been several studies, sadly, that indicate that we do not have the best care when you figure in everyone. And that's part of the problem. It is probably the best for people who can afford it, it would be good to say, but it is not necessarily the best. We're like 9th or 10th behind several European countries and a couple of Scandinavian countries in terms of deliverance of service and quality of service, I'm afraid. The last study I saw was a few years back, so I don't want to totally quote myself, but on the other hand, let's both Google it and talk again. But let's say that it's among the best. I'll give you that. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, I mean, some of the European countries have, nationalized healthcare systems, and including in Canada and some other third world countries, and that system hasn't worked because they've tried it and it doesn't work.
Again, not true.
I
don't know what kind of propaganda you're listening to, but you should listen to the Tom Hartmann show. He was recently in Denmark, and I was amazed. They were talking about how they have doctors who go to people's houses and take care of them, because their whole mission, it is government-delivered healthcare service, but the whole aim of it is to nip problems in the bud. So they have a whole team of round-the-clock doctors. So let's say that you're having heart palpitations at home, right? Rather than call an ambulance and transporting you to a high-end, first of all, a doctor comes by your house and says, okay, this person needs to go to the hospital. Oh, this person we can just give a nitroglycerin tablet and take care of. Or this person has a really bad case of gas. Let's give him a super-duper gas pill. So the problem is that misnomer is not true. There are several inventive ways that are happening in the world to deliver healthcare costs that are much more productive than ours. And it's sad, but it's true. Yes, there are waits for elective surgeries in countries where they have it. But, there's a reason why people are flying overseas to Thailand and to Hong Kong and to other places to have surgery. And that's because and to India, the whole new trend is to have hip replacements, knee replacements, all kinds of stuff in this country, to fly overseas to get the work done. And the reason that that's happening, Keith, is because the cost here is so astronomical that people are flying to get health care. It's become a whole new business. So, again, I will just point that out and let you speak again. Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, let me ask you a question. Let me start with you personally. What kind of health care do you have?
Actually, right now I don't have any because my wife lost her job about 5 months ago. She was actually working for the contracting company that provides the health care for the spouses and everything for the military.
Right.
And we had very good health coverage. It was 90-10. We only pay 10% of medical bills and everything.
Sure.
I used to be in the military myself for 5 years, and everything's free there. I mean, the quality of, health care from military.
Well, it's not free. It's paid for by your fellow taxpaying citizens who are happy to pony up for your service. I would, by the way, just let me add quickly, I would pony up for people who worked for AmeriCorps, too. I don't mind at all, because I think if you're working to make my country a better place or a safer place to live, I should contribute. So I hear what you're saying, but see, now, if one of you, God forbid, gets hurt, you're going to have to go to the emergency room and cost us all a bunch of money. So, see, this is why, practically speaking, it doesn't work for me, quite frankly, Keith. This is why I'm for some, for example, if you could, let's say Barack Obama's plan is you can get private insurance if you're a broker, you know, he's going to give some tax breaks to companies who give you health insurance. He's going to do all kinds of things to shore up the system. And he's also going to give you an array, a basket of arrays, so that if you're out of work, you can get, you can afford health care. That, you know, because to tell you the truth, I have Cobra right now. I have Cobra health insurance, and I have great. It's 90-10, too. It is so expensive to pay on my own. I'm probably going to have to go for a less good, cheaper individual plan. I wish I could band up with my fellow, I don't know, talk show hosts. I wish there were a way that I could go across the board and join. You know, right now I don't make enough in AFTRA, which is the union for voiceover artists, to qualify for that kind of insurance. But if there were more groups that we could join and spread the risk, like maybe there could be retired veterans who don't necessarily qualify for VA. Don't you qualify for the VA? Can't you go to the VA if you need help, Keith?
I could, yeah, but there's problems with that, too, because my father used to be in the military also, and he got very good care when he had knee surgery after he got out of the military. But there's problems with that system, too. There's going to be problems no matter where you go. With any system,
and I'm sure there are problems in Europe, too. But I don't think we have the best health care system in the world if you're doing without health insurance. You see what I'm saying? I don't think it's the best, because either it's not affordable enough for you and your wife to buy it right now when she's out of work, or it isn't enough for you to go to the VA because you're worried about the quality. Either way you run down that road, it's not good enough for me. Okay, so that's what I'm trying. That's why I have more hope in Obama than I do in the privatized, same old stuff from the past that John McCain is talking about, because what we've been doing in the past is broken and we need to fix it. For one thing, we need to streamline everything. We need to safeguard people's. Google's got these new systems where you can safeguard your health insurance information online. We all need to be more portable. We all need to cut out the paperwork. If we did a lot of that, we'd save each other a lot of money. Brokers would be free to sell more health insurance. People would be able to, we'd be able to reduce the overhead costs so that they could sell more affordable policies. If we spread the risk and didn't cherry pick, then the health insurance companies would be better able to supply insurance for people across the board. So I hear what you're saying, but I'd be wary of being just knee-jerk. You know, we're the best in the world. I'm not trying to criticize. I want my country. Don't misunderstand me. I love my country. I want it to be the best in the world. I want everybody to come here and go, wow, look at the United States. In 10 years, they completely changed their healthcare system to one that was broken, to one that worked for everyone. How amazing is that? And I don't care what kind of private or public solution we get to or how we arrive at, as long as it works for you and me, Keith, and your wife, and everybody else I can think of.
Right.
Thank you very much for your call. I appreciate it. Thanks for letting me stand on a soapbox. But be careful of those knee-jerk, yeah, what's the best in the world? It's fabulous. It's wonderful. And read up on Barack Obama. Contrast and compare. Don't just trust my opinion. Go to the websites. Go to John McCain. Go to Barack Obama. You look at it. Think with your gut as well as your head and think, you know, what the heck? Which one do I like better? I've done it. I like Barack Obama's better. I just tried to call it up, and the print's too small for me to broadcast it to you. But I don't like John McCain's policy. I just don't. Terry Pine, welcome to AM 760 Progressive Talk. Welcome, and thank you for joining us.
Hi, Aaron. How you doing?
I'm pretty swell. You? I'm a little worried about us, but I'm okay.
Well, I'm a little worried about us, too. I went to the Barack Obama speech yesterday.
How was that?
You know, he's amazing.
He really is amazing, isn't he?
I was there, and all those people, and I felt like he was talking straight to me.
He's very good at that. That's why he loves crowds. He's very energized with them, I think. Very.
And it was just, it was really energizing. And there were a lot of things that the press never finds out about when they put these things out. You know, the big chant, yesterday for me was when everybody was yelling, "No more lies."
That was, I read about that in one story, but I caught it in very few other places. You're absolutely right. That was interesting. That you guys chanted that while you were waiting for him to appear, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there were a lot of things that were really, really amazing on that one yesterday. But I'm campaigning for him every chance I get now. I'm in full campaign mode because my wife and I are both disabled. And we've been down the health care gambit. And these people, a lot of Republicans just don't do their research on anything. They hear what's on Fox, and they just... I got in a good confrontation with one kid that had 8 or 10 Republicans there, and they're not prepared to even argue the point. They make a point, and then they don't understand that it's not true.
Yeah, I worry about that, you know, because I came up under Mike Rosen's school of beat you down and argue with you, you know, so I try to learn as much as I possibly can. I always imagine I have to argue with Dan Kaplis or Mike Rosen or my father, God rest his soul, or my brother. And, you know, I just figure I better have my ducks in a row. I better understand what I'm talking about and be on solid ground with the facts, you know, and I try to prepare myself as much as possible, and good for you for doing that, too.
Well, I'm an ex-Republican, so I know how to talk to the Republicans.
Ooh, excellent. Got any tips for me?
Oh, well, there's a lot. Probably more time than you want to spend with me this morning, but the main thing is a lot of them are really religious.
Yeah.
And the point is, on religion, to any Republican out there, is if, you know, they don't want any abortions whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
But my point to a lot of them is if a woman gets raped and she's forced to have a baby, nobody will take care of that baby after it's born. Republicans won't do that.
Yeah, no one. That's part of my problem is what about the child after it's born? And that's what we need to be concerned about. And I think we'd all prefer less abortions and more birth control.
Well, sure we would.
You know, and if you believe in no birth control, you still have to let loose of your own private religious beliefs and let people practice what they believe. You know, you really do.
Well, yeah. And the other thing is if a woman gets raped and has a baby, and what happens when her rapist gets out of jail and wants to visitation rights?
Ugh.
Yeah.
Don't even go there. Thank you so much for your call.
Well,
I appreciate it, Terry. I'm sorry. We have to jump for a break. I apologize. We didn't mean to cut you off there a little bit. 8:51. I'm Aaron Hart. This is AM 760 Colorado Progressives Talk. Send me an email at aaron@aaronhartshow.com. Terry and Pine and any of the rest of you, aaron@aaronhartshow.com. I'm not good at pimping my own website. It's to get better. aaron@aaronhartshow.com. I'm Aaron Hart filling in on the J. Marvin Show on this Wednesday. It's 303-713-7600. Time for Colorado's Progressive Talk Traffic with John Turk. Hi, this is Aaron Hart on AM 760 Progressive Talk. I just sent you an email, John. Maybe we could get a guest on the voting issue, too. You know, one of the things that because Barack Obama's campaign today filed a voter rights lawsuit. Michael Falcone, writing in the New York Times, says responding to allegations of Republican Party officials in Macomb County, Michigan, plan to use home foreclosure lists. Listen to how gross the Republicans are. They're going to use home foreclosure lists to challenge voters at the polls in November. The Obama cam and the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, filed a lawsuit on Tuesday in federal court to prevent what they contend is an illegal practice. Can you imagine? Hi, let's go on people's misery. Let's go find people who went, you know, it's just gross. They are also allegedly sending out fake absentee ballots. And I just got some I cannot forget this. I know I need to jump to calls. But you know what? The other thing that they're doing is they're calling up voters in South Florida and going, hi, you Jewish? Great. Did you know that Barack Obama gave money to the Palestinian Liberation Organization? Total falsehood. Yeah. Dirty tactics starting up, all due to the John McCain campaign. Don't hear any of them coming out of the Barack Obama. Does he exaggerate and add sometimes? Sure. Has he lied outright? I haven't caught him in one. Diana in Greeley, welcome to AM 760 Colorado Progressive Talk. Good morning.
Good morning.
How's the hometown?
It's cool. It's fine.
Good.
I'll make this really quick.
Okay.
I would like to have you explain the Keating Five. Okay.
You know, I looked it up last night. I must have read your mind.
Cool. Okay. And I would like to spin off of the guy that said McCain paid.
You know what? I bozo forgot what time it was, and I've got to ask you, could you hold over the break? I know, Diana. Thank you very much.
I can't. I got to
All right.
Go.
Well, then write me an email. Thank you very much. I'm Aaron Hart. My fault. I apologize.